Tuesday night on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We got a 90-minute show the first hour here up on Sportsnet, the back half hour on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Lots to go through tonight across the network. We got Bruins and Oilers facing off after us. We're going to get into a little bit of a Friday 3 p.m. trade deadline preview with Frank Saravelli in about 5 minutes. Already things happening, okay? Things are happening. We're going to get into all of it.
Yeah, there's some scuttlebutt. There's some scuttlebutt to get into. Oh, we'll also get back into the Blue Jays discussion more specifically, run through some contingency plans in the hypothetical world without Gausman and Manoah, because we know both of them are dealing with some shoulder ailments already to contingency plans. We'll do that with Kayla McGrath. She'll hop on in about 30 minutes.
Raptors back in action tonight at 7:30 p.m. against New Orleans. We've got them on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course, and then Sportsnet 1. Smith and Jones are going to join us from Scotiabank Arena to tee it up. No Scotty Barnes, as a reminder, underwent hand surgery this weekend. So what's the world of the next couple games, 20 games-ish, look like without Scotty? We'll get into that with Smith and Jones.
And of course, best bets. We'll do a little WNBA expansion talk. Josh Donaldson on Blair and Barker today. We'll play some audio from that. So another busy day on the Fan pregame.
Okay, before we get to Frank, who's going to hopefully give us some inside scoop, we're 72 hours away from the NHL trade deadline. A lot of teams are in that hot seat in terms of they have an opportunity to sell. They have opportunity to make a move in terms of, you know, parting with maybe not franchise players, but people that could make a big difference for a lot of teams. There's still some in that murky middle. And there are definitely some on the hunt. It feels like this has been a bit of a quiet build, but this next section of time, we're already seeing on Twitter, we're hearing from the insiders that things could start happening.
Yeah, it's getting a little bit louder, but it feels like everything's kind of being squeezed at the end, which makes for good television on the day of, I'm sure everyone will be very happy about. But last week, we were talking about the weekend before, how many deals actually went down. We ran down about six or seven pretty high-profile deals that had big impacts on the teams that, you know, we're acquiring and trading these players, and we didn't really have any of that over the weekend. So it feels like a lot still has to happen now in a condensed period of time, only 72 hours, as you mentioned. So, yeah, I got my eye in Calgary. We've been talking about them all year. They still haven't traded Hanifin. I don't know if Jacob Markstrom's going to go, but Hanifin has to go, right? So Calgary, definitely a team to watch, and Jake Guentzel seems to be the topic du jour, but like every day, it seems like Jake Guentzel is one of the primary dominoes that has to fall before we see everything sort of crystallize here ahead of March 8th.
Yeah, it feels like Calgary, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia might be the teams with like maybe the most to give at this point. I wonder for Pittsburgh, though, because Guentzel is the one we've been talking about. But are there going to be other names, right? Obviously, Sidney Crosby and that core, they don't want to be in a rebuild. But at this opportunity that Kyle Dubas has, I wonder how much he, you know, pushes that boundary. Flyers have a couple free agent defensemen. We've been talking about that in terms of the Maple Leafs, at least. Calgary have those big names. And then if you just look at the Canadian picture in general, like, you would anticipate the Canucks seeing this as an opportunity to buy. Mm-hmm. You would anticipate the Maple Leafs looking to add at least one player. We haven't talked about the Jets in a while. Like, what are the Jets up to? Calgary, obviously, we know are going to be sellers. The Sens even might have a couple pieces. So I even think our Canadian outlook on Friday might be a busy one.
Yeah, I think with the exception of, I guess, Montreal, which we know who they are, I suppose. But, like, there should be some intent over the next 72 hours. Mm-hmm. Definitely they can sell someone. But they're not as defined as the buyers and sellers. But, you know, this is one of the greatest chances for a Canadian team to hoist the cup. Mm-hmm. We have four legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, and you can quibble with them if you really want to, but Jets are hunting for a division title. That's a Stanley Cup contender. Same with the Canucks. Maple Leafs, maybe not hunting for a division title, but in the mix in the top four or five teams in the Eastern Conference without question. And that leaves the Oilers, who are maybe the odds on favorite to win the Stanley Cup, or at least close to right now. So there are a lot of Canadian teams who are firmly in the buyer category and a couple in the sellers category. And it seems like all of them still have work to do. So I think it's going to make for an exciting next couple of days.
All right, let's bring in Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, we are just a few days away from the trade deadline. We're starting to see rumblings and mumblings on Twitter. What would you say the temperature is at right now in terms of things starting to happen?
I would say it is beginning to bubble. The simmer before the boil is what I would call it. It's been some interesting back and forth today. I think there's been no shortage of teams that are trying to make something happen. But I also think that there's really a lot that will come down to Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, based on what you guys were talking about. Just the sheer number of teams still left to conduct significant business. I'm talking about the Rangers, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Edmonton Oilers. None of those teams have made a move, to say nothing of what the Leafs could still be up to as well. So there's a lot still to happen. And I think you couple that with some of the crystallization that I think we've all seen in the standings over the last week, that really has the makings for some fireworks on Friday.
So Guentzel can't hold everything up, but Jake Guentzel seems like a pretty important domino with the trade deadline. And of course, what Pittsburgh might do and what contenders looking for a scoring punch might do. I guess he's as good as gone. It seems that way. But do you have any sense of where Pittsburgh might be leaning in terms of making a move and where Guentzel might end up?
So I'm going to present a bit of what I would call, I guess, an alternate viewpoint based on what I've seen in terms of reporting in the last 24 hours. And I believe, just in speaking to sources, that the Pittsburgh Penguins have actually had a relatively tough time drumming up a strong market to pit teams against when it comes to trading Jake Guentzel. And part of the reason for that is Jake Guentzel is very likely to be a pure rental. He's probably, you know, I don't want to put a number on it, but, you know, 75% likely to be going to free agency on July 1st, that teams are kind of going into this eyes wide open in terms of what that trade might look like because of that. So you're talking about really a small handful, I'd say 3 to 4 teams that have, I think, authentically been in the mix on Guentzel. And you compare that to, you know, Ailish, I know off the jump you were talking about what else might Pittsburgh get up to. I think 10 teams have been in the mix on Riley Smith. Significantly more interest, different, you know, impact player, of course. But because of the disparity in acquisition cost, what you're talking about is a pretty big difference. So, you know, it's not necessarily what you've read on social media, but I also think there's a healthy dose of what I would call spin cycle at this time of year, that it's hard to try and cut through that sometimes.
Yeah, the idea that Pittsburgh will be a really interesting one hasn't changed for me. I think even this past weekend, with the way that one win against Calgary has just kind of made it a bit more clear that there'll be some pieces, and I think they're going to be one of the most interesting ones to watch. In terms of the Canucks, I've seen like there's a connection there between Pittsburgh and maybe Vancouver, or interest at least for maybe Guentzel being one of the opportunities to land in Vancouver. Is that one of the four teams that you said could be interested?
I think they've certainly kept tabs on it, but I don't know that they'd be the most likely when it comes to Guentzel. And look, I've seen the reporting. I can only tell you based off of, I'm not saying anyone's wrong. I can only tell you based off of what I've heard and know. The connection to Pittsburgh is natural. Rick Tocchet, Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, Teddy Bluger, Ian Cole, go through the list. Like, a ton of guys have ended up in Vancouver that were previously in Pittsburgh. No doubt that Jake Guentzel would be a strong fit and makes a lot of sense for Vancouver. I also think that there's a huge part of them that's saying, look, we made our splash. And yes, it is part of Jim Rutherford's hallmark and playbook that in the past, when things haven't worked, he's not been afraid to, you know, cut bait and make changes, but they've outlaid significant assets to this point. How much deeper in for one playoff run will they go for a rental? I think there's certainly a lot of question in their own front office about that.
Yeah, they're interesting because, you know, the Elias Lindholm thing maybe hasn't worked to the extent that they hoped. They got this deal done with Pettersson, but maybe Lindholm was a contingency for Pettersson. And it seems like things have kind of come really fast at this group all of a sudden, and adding another player like Jake Guentzel to the mix, like, yeah, you're a lot more talented, but what's this all look like? And are you straying away from what got you the great start that they have had to this point? You mentioned like things that have to happen. I think Noah Hanifin's got to be on that list. Like, Noah Hanifin has to be dealt, or it's malpractice, isn't it? Like, this is a really good asset who is trending towards unrestricted free agency. Has already said he doesn't want to play in Canada anymore. That may have changed, but does Hanifin have to go before Friday?
I don't see any path in which he remains with the Calgary Flames. They're not going to be re-signing him. He's not going to be re-signing there. He's given them a list of teams that are his preferred destinations. The Flames have been trying to accommodate that. And it's been a slow go. It's been a tough grind in terms of trying to find a balance between some of the places that Hanifin would like to get to, and also then those teams not really having the proper assets. And when I say those teams, I mean Tampa and Florida and some of the other teams that are believed to be on his preferred destination list. Those teams don't have first round picks until 2026. How does that help the Flames now? How can you find a way to bridge that gap and make a deal? I think that this has been an absolute thorn in the Calgary Flames side. I think he's more or less kind of held the process hostage. And I think there's a chance here that someone just steps up that's a pure rental team where he doesn't have the control, and the Flames wrestle back control in this deal and send him somewhere else. They're trying to accommodate, but you know, they haven't gotten anywhere close to a point where they've zeroed in on one team yet when it comes to Hanifin.
I guess if we're talking about the Calgary Flames, it makes sense to just get a check of Jacob Markstrom. Of course, been a big topic this trade season. Do you have any idea or any like latest thoughts on if he would be someone that would move before Friday's 3 p.m. deadline?
I'm sorry, who did you ask about?
Sorry, Jacob Markstrom.
I think, look, the New Jersey Devils are going to make, I believe, one last-ditch effort. You heard their GM and Tom Fitzgerald say again today when talking about Lindy Ruff's departure that he knows the goaltending hasn't been good enough. This is the third time potentially in Fitzgerald's five seasons in his tenure that the Devils will finish in the bottom three in save percentage. That's no good. It's unacceptable. It's going to hold your team back from being a playoff team. But the thing is, the Flames are in an absolute position of power now. They can either get a haul for Jacob Markstrom, or they can sit and wait when there's a thin free agent class next summer and on the goaltending market and have four or five teams eating out of the palm of your hand for Jacob Markstrom instead of just one at this exact moment in time before the deadline. So the Flames aren't in a rush. If they get the right deal, they'll do it. But in the meantime, as tough as this has been for Markstrom, who is clearly a competitor that wants a chance to win and knows that he probably isn't going to have that opportunity during this term on his contract in Calgary, you know, he might just have to sit and wait.
Looking at contract and ability and everything, the entire picture, what do you think the most premium asset on the block is right now?
I think it's Pavel Buchnevich. I think to be able to, and he's for whatever reason not talked about enough. Mm-hmm. He's to me the most unheralded point per game guy in the league, and people kind of were chirping at me today saying, "Oh, he's not a point per game this season." And well, go back and look at the numbers: 195 games played with the St. Louis Blues, 191 points. So 0.98 points per game. I don't know if you
could
guys were
up.
Talking about. Yeah, you guys were talking before about how we round up. You want to be optimistic or pessimistic? Yeah. I'm going to take at 0.98. That counts as 1 point per game in my book. But his impact, and at $5.8 million this year and next, if I'm a contending team that's going to outlay significant assets, I want someone that I'm going to have two kicks at the can with. And that would, you know, if you're in Edmonton, for instance, you want to add a top six winger to your group. Why wouldn't someone like Pavel Buchnevich, who can get to the net and score those goals like Zach Hyman does, doesn't he make a lot of sense to balance out your second line? To me, he does. The Oilers are one of the teams that have been engaged with the St. Louis Blues on Buchnevich. And when you can compare and contrast what Jake Guentzel as pure rental might go for on the winger market, I think it's really not going to be a huge uptick to squeeze Buchnevich out of St. Louis.
If we're rounding up, speaking of Hyman, he's on pace for 60 goals this year. 60 goals for Zach Hyman.
Sources say pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. So that's an interesting name connected to the Oilers. What's the most interesting name that you've heard connected to the Maple Leafs?
I don't. Honestly, this is going to sound funny to say. I haven't really heard any interesting. Like when we were going back to the Ilya Labushkin talk last week, Does that count as interesting?
I mean, everything is a little interesting, but not all that interesting.
Just because it's the Leafs, but like they're scouring the market, trying to turn over every stone that they possibly can to try and find help defensively. I think, you know, Nick Jensen in Washington before he signed his extension, really attractive player. Maybe you value the term and you're okay with it, but to me, post-extension, not as attractive. They really need help on the back end. It's not just these current injuries. It's they needed significant upgrades before then. And I think we talk about where this team is at in the Eastern Conference that is wide open this year. And part of me is just saying to myself, and I'm sure the Leafs front office is thinking this as well, after all the years that we've had incredible expectations and pressure, no one is really, not to say that it's dropped off, but with the way that the regular season has gone, no one is really over the top with expectations on this team, and they've played pretty well, 13-3 run. Could this be the Leafs' year? Could this be the year that they make the magical addition that, you know, may not be the biggest splash on the market, the most interesting name that you're asking me about? But if you're looking for a source of optimism, I go, the door is absolutely wide open in the East. You've got a couple really good teams, and who's to say that they're even going to make it to round two?
As Zach Bogosian was another name I think Maple Leafs fans had circled, but he signs an extension right before we get on with you, so we can't even have that as an interesting name that's being floated around.
And like Lil Bushkin, it's not the most interesting.
It wasn't, but, you know, it was a name. I'm wondering from you, Frank, which team do you think has the most pressure to be aggressive come, I guess, by Friday at 3 p.m., whether they're being aggressive in terms of selling or being aggressive in terms of buying? Like, you want to see the most amount of transactions come from that Twitter account.
Well, most pressure, I guess it depends on how you define it, but I think the team that's in the toughest spot is the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm-hmm. They're in a playoff position. They've vastly exceeded expectations this year. They've got two pending unrestricted free agents on the blue line in Sean Walker and Nick Seeler. They've been trying to extend them, having discussions. They now have a really good sense of what that's going to look like. But in reality, the Flyers should probably stick to what they actually are, which in my view is a team really likely to be a non-playoff team next year and quite literally in the throes of a rebuild that just happened to have this season that's come out of the clear blue sky under John Tortorella. How do you find a way to not get lost in what you really are when you have your market that's like, hey, yeah, let's be a playoff team and let's do something interesting? How do you tell your players in your room, we're trying to establish a winning culture here, but we're also trading pieces away? So I view the pressure a little bit differently. Like, I think Colorado, in a totally different end of the spectrum, they're facing real pressure to fill out what in my view is a mostly thin and top heavy forward group. The Edmonton Oilers are facing a whole different kind of pressure, which is to finally break through in the Connor McDavid era and get while the getting's good with McDavid and Draisaitl on, you know, mostly really reasonable contracts. So it's all over the map. I'd say there's different pressure points and hotspots, but those are three that come to mind.
So the best sort of deadline deals are the ones where it's kind of two birds for one stone, right? You make a deal and you fill two holes, and a lot of teams are looking to fill multiple holes. I guess we'll leave out that team for now and look at a team that actually could satisfy multiple needs for a team. And I have the Anaheim Ducks circled. I mean, Adam Henrique, Frank Vetrano, a Carrick on the back end. It feels like there's blockbuster capability for the Anaheim Ducks. Are they going to be that one-stop shop for someone?
They could be. I think the Washington Capitals are in a really similar category. Mm. Nick Dowd, Joel Edmondson, you know, they're looking at a bunch of different possibilities. Anthony Mantha, it seems like right now we're seeing reports that Anthony Mantha is on the way to Vegas from Washington. So don't know if that's going to be a package deal, but they were one of the teams that I was looking at. I think Arizona could be another package spot that could retain salary. Has Jason Zucker that they're holding out tonight for trade-related protection. Matt Dumba on the back end. There's a few of those teams. I think St. Louis could get creative and interesting. A lot of people have talked behind the scenes. The Calgary Flames, Hanifin plus a forward to really try and juice the return. I don't know that that's ultimately what it's going to end up being. I still think it's going to be Hanifin alone, but I think there's a number of different possibilities that really, when you consider, I think, what we would call a mostly pretty thin market, you've got 4 to 5 maybe true impact players, and we've talked about them. Outside of that, you may have to package players together in order to really make a dent and a significant upgrade on your lineup.
All right, we're 72-ish hours away from the trade deadline. Frank, I think we might chat again on Friday, but if not, enjoy this week and best of luck sifting through all of your insider messaging.
It's I feel like I'm in a washing machine right now, just trying to get out of the skin.
Well, be safe. Thanks, Frank.
See you guys.
Frank Saravelli, president of Hockey Content at dailyfaceoff.com. Yeah, a couple names there. We did see some Anthony Mantha.
Yeah, the Mantha one's interesting.
Rumors online to the Vegas Golden Knights. They've had a bit of a tough go here. We've seen that. I mean, last night I had them hopefully beating the Columbus Blue Jackets. That was the opposite of that, a 6-3 loss. But they were the pinnacle there, the defending champs. But that looks like a team that really needs to be aggressive by Friday. I think there's a lot of West Coast teams that are in that mix, right? And they're one of them.
Yeah, they're languishing, though, for sure, kind of falling off the pace in the Pacific Division. And it's interesting because every year they seem to find someone on LTIR at the right time. And again, I'm not making fun of a lacerated spleen. That's what Mark Stone's dealing with, right? But again, it's another opportunity where they can add when they entered the season cap-strapped. And yet they get a guy like Anthony Mantha, we believe, based on Frank's reporting and others who have mentioned it. But I was going to ask him about like a contender that's fallen out of the contendership tier. And for me, that's Vegas. Like we've seen
them. You're really down on Vegas.
I just feel like Vegas, we saw them against Toronto, I don't know, it was a couple weeks ago now. We've seen them a couple other times. They don't look like they're as good as the other three teams in the Pacific Division, at least right now.
Kings were,
they look very thin.
They're down too.
I'm bullish on the Kings. Because they're playing well, okay. And Vegas is not right now. But now they're adding. Like, I thought there was a chance that Vegas would maybe take a step back here. But I guess that's not in Kelly McCrimmon's DNA. They're going to keep going after it. But I just don't think there's... I think they're going to fall out of the top three. I think they're going to be in a wild card. And I think it's going to be tough sledding in a wild card, despite, you know, the championship pedigree that they hold.
I feel that way about the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's weird. It's like that era is kind of slowly, quietly coming to an end. I don't think I remember a Tampa Bay Lightning teardown or a sell-off anytime in my recent memory.
And yet they might get Noah Hanifin.
And yet they might. And then... You know, they're still like they're on the outside looking in, but they're a team that you just, you know, the championship pedigree still runs in that blood a little bit. So you can never count them out. But the Atlantic, you know, Panthers running away with it a little bit there. Bruins got some big points against Maple Leafs last night. So
it gives you a little more reason too, once you've won too. Like you're trying to, oh, can we get a little bit more out of this? Well, we won one. So it doesn't like hurt us that we're making a mistake potentially of buying in when we might necessarily not have it. So if you've won, it makes it easier to make those decisions.
All right, we've got just a couple more days here until the NHL trade deadline. Obviously, we'll have full coverage on Friday. It's going to be an absolute blast. Let's take a quick pivot, though, to the Toronto Raptors, who are back in action tonight against New Orleans at home, 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1, and we'll have them on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, as well. We will talk to Smith and Jones a little later in the show. But Kelly Olynyk yesterday signed a contract extension, 2 years with the Toronto Raptors, and you know he's a guy that this means a lot to him. There's a lot of Raptors now that have that connection, Canadian connection at least. But here's Kelly Olynyk earlier today talking about, you know, how he's wanted to be a Toronto Raptor his whole life.
It was an amazing, you know, welcome, you know, homecoming, you know, enjoying being home, you know, on home soil. You know, that's been really special. You know, the staff and the organization has been top tier. It's been great. For me, it was like, you know, they traded for me. They wanted me here. You know, just to reciprocate that love and, you know, show that I do want to be here too. You know, I've, you know, wanted to be here since I was 4 years old. So it's, you know, special and, you know, just to create that, you know, that trust and that bond and, you know, hopefully, you know, be here for the rest of my career.
And he's already made a pretty big impact with the Raptors. Of course, with no Scotty Barnes, it's going to be a different looking Raptors team. But locks himself in there for the next 2 years at least. And obviously, I think there's always an element, you know, with RJ coming home, that means something to him. Kelly knowing that this means something to him. I don't know if that's a 5%, 10% thing that helps with team camaraderie, team passion, what it means to put that jersey on. But, I mean, you can't deny that it doesn't mean a lot to some of these guys. Maybe that makes them want to stick around and try and go through maybe a half rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, not to trumpet this again, but you hope this is not just a individual feeling, right? Like, this is something that can actually touch other players and be meaningful to other members of the Canadian basketball community. I think RJ and Kelly are the ones that maybe are most applicable to this. And now they play for the Toronto Raptors. But are there others who might want to follow suit? Because this might have to be the tack the Raptors take to attract premium talent. Because guess what? Premium talent comes out of Canada, and maybe some of those premium talents grew up thinking, hey, they want to feel, or they want to, or they feel the same way about the Raptors as Kelly Olynyk feels.
So Raptors against Pelicans tonight, who are fifth in the West, a bit of a congested Western Conference, which would be an interesting one to watch down the stretch. We'll continue teeing that up at 6 or 7 o'clock with Smith and Jones will join us. We'll talk a little bit about Toronto's bid possibly for WNBA team as well, which is exciting news yesterday. Mm-hmm. But we will take a quick break because we're going to have Caitlin McGrath join us on the other side of The Athletic. She's got a great article up about, I guess, already a little bit of a planning contingency mode with the Blue Jays and their pitching situation. A couple, you know, light injuries that we have our eyes on. So we'll go through a little bit of a spring training debrief with Caitlin McGrath on the other side of the break. All that to come on the Fan Pregame.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, next half hour on Sportsnet, and then we'll take the final 30 minutes on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, to talk to Smith and Jones ahead of Raptors and Pelicans, which will begin at 7:30. But we'll take a little look around spring training with the Toronto Blue Jays, who dropped one to the Pittsburgh Pirates today, but they got bigger things possibly to worry about. A little bit of a pitching pulse check with Caitlin McGrath, who joins us now from The Athletic. Caitlin, how's it going?
It's good. How are you guys?
We're good. We don't know if we should be panicking or just being calm and composed, but we're seeing a lot about pitching injuries already. And I know only good things or only bad things can happen in spring training, like injuries. But how much should we be worried about, you know, Alek Manoah, Kevin Gausman, just to start with those two big names that are having a little bit of a setback so far?
Yeah, I would say it's never a good thing if we're talking about injuries to your starting rotation in spring training. We're about 3 weeks away or so from opening day. And the way that those injuries have been described seem pretty minor. But at the same time, you know, any little thing with a pitcher, you have to be very careful with. And especially when you're talking about, you know, two people that are very, very important to the Blue Jays, obviously, and Gausman, who is their ace, and then Alek Manoah, who is a guy that this season is really, really important for him and for the Blue Jays. So, you know, not ideal situation. I think there's still a little bit of time to not hit the panic button yet. At the same time, I think it's fair to talk about maybe them not being able to start opening day, whether it's just missing one start or two. I think that's in the realm of possibility at this point, especially if you're talking about, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint with the baseball season. So you want these guys around for the whole season or as much as the season as possible. So if it's just a matter of missing one start or two to begin with, maybe that's the route you take. But I do think the Blue Jays' depth is probably going to be tested maybe sooner than we thought. I think going into this season, we always sort of wondered, is the rotation going to be as good as it was last year? Can they stay as healthy as they were last year? And I think that we're getting an answer to that question maybe right away.
Yeah, so I guess there's three options, right? There's the both of them are available. There's the both of them are unavailable. And then there's one of them's available and one of them might need more time. I guess because Bowden Francis has been one of the buzzy names so far at spring training, that it's just as simple as Bowden Francis takes one of the spots in the rotation for as long as it needs to. But if both of them are unavailable to start and you went through all the contingency plans, what is like the most palatable recourse, do you think? Because Bowden Francis, I'm sure, will be used, but if they have to use someone else, who's up?
Yeah, I think that probably the name that you put next to Bowden Francis is Mitch White. You know, I know that maybe the last impression that he gave Blue Jays fans maybe wasn't a good one. He had a bit of a rough go last year. A lot of that he attributed to sort of a lingering shoulder issue that I think was bothering him even as he came off the IL last year. It was something that affected him in spring and I guess sort of lingered. And so he got DFA'd from the Blue Jays last year and talked about a little bit how that was almost a period for him to reset mentally and physically. And he went back to Buffalo And he ended the year really strong, and he's looked good in spring training in terms of his pitches this year. He's throwing a little bit harder, which is always a nice thing to see in spring. So I think he is a name that I would put right alongside Bowden Francis as someone that could play into that rotation, whether you kind of compare them. So if you're missing one starter, maybe you use Bowden Francis and Mitch White both as sort of a tandem, or one piggybacks off the other. If you need to fill two spots in the rotation, then yeah, maybe you're using both of those guys. And then you're using someone like Trevor Richards behind one of them that can go multiple innings. You are, like I said before, kind of testing that depth a little bit. There's other guys on the 40-man, Wes Parsons, another name that maybe Blue Jays fans remember from the last game of the season last year, which was a bit of a garbage time game. But, you know, there's some names. Ricky Tiedemann, also a name that you're going to hear a lot of, but he's also a guy that had a bit of a setback in spring. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to throw him into the rotation to begin the year. I don't think he'll be ready either, and he's sort of got to build his pitch count as well. And so Mitch White and Bowden Francis are the two names to watch, but there are some other sort of depth guys that may play into it.
Okay, so, you know, no one's going to get overly excited about Mitch White. I mean, if we see it and he pitches well, I guess he can turn everyone's or change everyone's mind. Ricky Tiedemann, yeah, that would get people excited. Mm. Probably not going to happen, though, but there's a couple good pitchers still out there. Is there any way this forces the Blue Jays' hand to be a little bit more aggressive, to spend a little bit more, and to go out and make sure that the strength of this team remains the strength of this team?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Who's more desperate right now, the Toronto Blue Jays or the Boston Red Sox, right? So I would say that I'm not really sitting here anticipating the Blue Jays making a move, just because, like I said earlier, and all signs suggest that the injuries to Gausman, I think they are even hesitant to call the thing that Gausman is dealing with an injury right now. And then with Manoah, it seems to be minor. So both these things feel fairly minor. It's not like they are at risk of missing their entire season, although that's what they've let on. Sometimes teams can be very, very sneaky with the way they describe injuries, though. So nothing would surprise me, but I'm not sitting here sort of expecting to write a story on Blake Snell anytime soon or Montgomery. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, never impossible, but I think the Blue Jays have kind of been saying for a while that they feel good with the team they have, both from a position standpoint and also from a pitching depth standpoint. They've talked a lot about how they've built their pitching depth, both for the bullpen and the rotation. That's going to be tested early. And I think right now, I would anticipate more expecting an addition at the trade deadline if something doesn't work out for the team, as opposed to adding one of those free agent starters right now.
Do you find it weird that those free agent starters are just sitting around waiting for the call? Like, this isn't something that, you know, happens very often. You've covered this game for long enough. Two big names just waiting to find the right fit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really weird offseason. You know, obviously, a lot of those guys that have been waiting around are Boris clients. And we've seen recently that he's gotten the job done for two of his big guys, Bellinger and Chapman, obviously signing recently. You know, not maybe the huge, lengthy deals that they were hoping for, but still deals where they have some flexibility to go back into the market. They're making a good amount of money for at least 1 year, potentially more. And so I would, you know, put my faith in Scott Boras to do that again with these two remaining guys. He knows what he's doing, obviously. You know, I do think it's just a matter of time before those two guys start. I would expect by the start of the season, they should be signed, but obviously being pitchers, they're probably not going to be ready. I mean, they're not going to be ready for the start of the season. I mean, obviously they're both probably throwing on their own right now. But you know, what team out there is going to make that move? I think the Yankees could still add a pitcher if we're talking about the AL East. Boston Red Sox, obviously, they look pretty in need of a starter, though I don't know if they're willing to, you know, commit the money. And yeah, like the Blue Jays, you could throw them in. I don't expect them to make a move, but again, there's teams out there with needs, and there's, you know, the reigning Cy Young winner right there for the taking. So I would expect it to happen soon, but also like the fact that it hasn't happened yet kind of boggles my mind as well.
Okay, so we've went through some negative-ish storylines for the Blue Jays to begin camp. What's the most encouraging thing that's reminded out of spring training so far?
Oh, good question. I mean, I think something that's been encouraging has just been kind of the seriousness and accountability that the Blue Jays have approached this season. You know, I remember Bo Bichette talking a few weeks ago, and just talking about how, you know, yes, this team's confident. Yes, they have a lot of belief in themselves, but also they got to go out and prove it. And I think that there's sort of a level of, I don't know, I guess this team has sort of realized that they've underperformed these last few years. And there seems to just be this really serious approach to this has to be our year. Like it's time to, you know, put up some wins in the postseason. It's time to really show up in the postseason and go for, you know, a lengthy run here. So I think that that's been, you know, encouraging for me. And, you know, I do think the position player group seems very excited. I think Vladdy's looked pretty good in spring so far. Bo Bichette has picked up where he left off last year. He looks great as well. You know, Justin Turner has been a really nice addition as well. And so it does feel like a different vibe this year. Still kind of motivated and fun, but also just a little bit more of that urgency and that seriousness to say like, all right, it's really, really time to get going here.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Bo Bichette. It's also his birthday today. So 1 year older, 1 year wiser, but it seems like he's also taken a lot of leadership on his shoulders this year. Maybe he always has, but it seems like he's more forthright about it when he speaks about this team and the direction that it's going. I feel like we might see a different Bo in terms of a growth in how he communicates, how he leads by example. Is that what you're feeling so early on into the season as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a lead by example guy. He's a guy that, you know, works so, so hard. And you talk about someone that you see every single day, you taking infield ground balls, going in the cage, taking BP every single day. He's there early. So he definitely has always been a lead by example guy, even when he was a young player in the league. But I think that as he's gained experience and been around some really great leaders, you know, Marcus Semien was a huge influence for him. You know, Brandon Belt last year, Justin Turner a little bit this year. I think just being around leaders has made Bo probably more comfortable to speak up, kind of knows that his voice is very important to the team and to his teammates, and his teammates really, really value his opinion and what he has to say. You know, he's a really cerebral baseball player. I mean, he's obviously grown up around the game, spends a lot of time thinking about the game, thinking about hitting particularly. He's pretty much like a hitting savant. And so you always see him kind of talking to his teammates on the side around the batting cages, just about maybe what he sees in their swing or anything that he can help them. And so he's always done that. And I think that this year you'll probably see him take that next step in terms of just being comfortable talking about, you know, bigger picture stuff when it comes to the team. And realizing that his voice is really important and it really matters to his teammates. And, you know, he's been in the league long enough that he does have enough time, I think, to take on that leadership role now.
Chatting with Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Okay, so accountability, seriousness, all of those things. That means there's some expectations, or let's get real here, because it's time to actually have some success. But if there is no success, if this season finds its completion without success, what happens? Like, what are the consequences for this team, for this group, if this season is just like the rest of them?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great question, and it's one that's hard to answer because we haven't really had to think of that for a really long time. It's felt like every year that the last few seasons has ended, it's been like, all right, well, like run this group back again and try again next year. Everyone's still relatively young. You add a piece here, you add a piece there, still got a great core, and you go for it again. And I think that this year, if, you know, what happens is that they miss the postseason, or they get to the postseason again and lose in the wild card, say, and don't win another postseason game, then yeah, I think that that's when hard questions will need to be answered. You have to wonder, like, is this a core worth investing in? Is someone like Bo Bichette and Vladdy Guerrero Jr., are they going to be guys that you want to pay a lot of money to play here for the next, I don't know, 8 years, 10 years, however long? You know, bigger questions too in terms of the team leadership, right? You have to ask questions about Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, John Schneider, all those things. So it'll be a really, really tough off season. I think if things don't go well, it will be one that we haven't seen in a while here, because I basically since what, 2018, 2019, you kind of had been riding with this core and saying, you know, this is the group that were that is going to lead us to success here. And they have been successful in the sense that, you know, they're a team that has won close to 90 or above 90 wins the last few years. They've made the postseason the last few years. They're always a competitive team, but obviously they haven't done enough in the postseason to, you know, satisfy the fan base and satisfy themselves. So yeah, it's a difficult question to answer like right now, because it's hard to know, but I do think like, it's pretty clear that it would be a difficult offseason. If we thought this offseason was asking a lot of hard questions, I think next offseason you'd ask even harder questions and maybe get the answers to those. The team could look a lot different, I think, next year. Now, you wouldn't have to necessarily like tear it all down, because there's still 1 year for Bo and Vlad. But I do think that you would sort of be looking ahead to the future and say, okay, what do we do? How do we pivot from here if we have to?
I want to ask you about Josh Donaldson. Yesterday, of course, his retirement announcement after a lengthy career and some really important memories here in Toronto with the Blue Jays. It feels like he's going to be remembered as a Blue Jay. Not really sure if he has like a home anywhere else. Like, he feels like a Blue Jay for me, at least. When you're looking back at his career and what he accomplished with the Blue Jays, what do you remember most about Josh Donaldson?
Yeah, I mean, I was not on the beat when he was in his heyday with the Blue Jays. I was watching from afar, I guess. I obviously remember, I grew up in Toronto, was raised a Blue Jays fan. And so I obviously remember that 2015 team where they just took over the city, and everywhere you looked, people were wearing Blue Jays gear. And, you know, I was working in a newspaper at the time, and it was like, we couldn't produce enough Blue Jays content. You know, anything Blue Jays related was going up on our website. And so, you know, I remember that time and just seeing baseball come back alive. And obviously he was a huge part of that, just being part of that team that was very beloved, and also having a great year himself as the MVP that year. So that's kind of what I remember. I do also remember when he came back for the first time following his trade, I think it was with the Braves, and him getting a huge ovation. And I remember him talking, and I think after that he had sort of a rocky ending with the Blue Jays, in the sense that he wasn't really playing, he was injured, he got traded while he was on the IL essentially, and didn't really get a goodbye with the fans. So I remember when he came back that first time, how emotional it was for him and the fans. So those are two things that kind of stick out to me.
Yeah, he's definitely front and center of a generation of Blue Jays teams that everyone can kind of remember, and it really, really resonated with a lot of people. That run, clearly, as you mentioned, couldn't put enough in the newspaper, couldn't put enough on any website, because it was as interesting a time as there has been to be a Blue Jays fan. But in your time covering the team, like, what player or what story or what sort of compares to that? Like, what was in the Donaldson 2015 Blue Jays vein in terms of interest and intrigue, the person that's been most interesting that you've covered since you've been on the beat?
Oh, I mean, probably Vlad, honestly. I remember Vlad's debut, and I don't know that I've ever since seen that many reporters around for one event. It was crazy. You know, I remember every seat in the press box being taken, and that does not happen at the Rogers Center. Like, there, especially in the 2019 season, where the Blue Jays weren't exactly an exciting team. But Vlad came up, and it was like there was cameras following him everywhere. Obviously, his dad came, his whole family was there, and so that started what has just been like a really, you know, exciting and a lot of fun to cover Vlad over the years. Obviously, his 2021 season, very memorable. And he's definitely been interesting, just his history in the game, what he's capable of, the way that he has sort of matured and grown as well and getting more comfortable. He's a guy everybody loves. And I've really enjoyed getting to, you know, talk to him. And Vlad's a guy that I think that, you know, I understand why fans, you know, have such high expectations of him, and sometimes why it feels like he can come, you know, fall short of those expectations. The bar is so high for him, and he set that bar. Obviously, we know he's, as good as he can be, as he's shown in 2021. And so, you know, I do think that he's a guy, a player that is capable of sort of capturing a nation or capturing a whole fan base once again. And so, you know, I'm excited to see him. He seems to be really motivated coming into this year. And so, you know, I'm really eager to see if we can see that Vlad that we kind of know he can be this year.
I remember Vlad's debut, because the second that, I guess, the Blue Jays tweeted out that he would be making his Blue Jays debut, I got tickets, ran down to the Rogers Center, and I was one of the first people that got a Vladdy jersey in the Jays shop. And they had me on like TV, I guess, buying it. And I'm like scavenging through trying to buy the jersey.
Your first Sportsnet appearance right there.
Yeah, I didn't even work here. I manifested it myself. But that was a really exciting time. It was so much hope and optimism. So hopefully we rekindle that and have it again this season. Caitlin, we appreciate your time. Great to chat. And we'll definitely have you on. It's a long baseball season ahead, so get ready.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem. That's Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Yeah, I was very excited. I still have that jersey, and I would like to wear it to some playoff games, boys.
That's kind of the difference, too, because we talk about this team being, you know, partially Bo's and partially Vlad's. But the way in which they were first introduced is different, right? And that's maybe why we treat them or see them a little bit differently. Like, Bo obviously had fanfare, right? There was excitement. There was definite, you know, he's still the same father-son baseball story as Vlad, just not as extreme, right? Yeah. With not as much fanfare really attached to it, and yet maybe a little less intrigue and a little less media attention, but he's delivered more so than Vladdy's done, and it's still like we're waiting for Vladdy. You're waiting for that end of the story where, hey, this is the start, this is the finish, this is where he was supposed to be. And he's still not there yet in a lot of ways. And maybe that's why, like, yeah, it's both their teams, but a lot of the blame or a lot of the negative attention kind of follows Vladdy because he hasn't delivered on the hype that was there the first time he showed up in that ballpark.
Yeah, definitely. They had the one MVP-esque season, and we're waiting for more.
Waiting for the follow-up. The movie.
Before we take a quick break and get back into Raptors, Elliot Friedman confirming that Anthony Mantha will go from Washington to Vegas for a second round pick and a fourth round pick. So things are starting, things are moving. And then Barry Trotz was just chatting with the media ahead of some of these big trade deadline decisions and said, quote, "The prices are ridiculous for what general managers are asking for players, for rentals and all that. But I'm a rookie GM. I don't know a whole lot." It's funny.
I mean, ridiculous low, ridiculous high. I mean, Mantha,
ridiculous.
Mantha for a second that and fourth seems like, no? I mean, if you're a buyer, that's what you want to see,
exactly.
No?
Exactly.
And, well, the Predators, we don't know because they're a team that should probably be selling, but they've won a million games in a row and now they might be buying. I'm not really sure.
My UC Saros might be a long gone hope and dream.
Probably could have got better than a second and fourth.
Probably could have. Okay, let's take a quick look at our best bets for tonight. I'm going to ride with my Dallas Stars. Big on them this month. Big on them around the trade deadline. I'm going to go with them on the puck line at -1.5. With a Jason Robertson goal at +240. Feeling good about the Dallas Stars, and I want to make sure that I cash in on them because we have a show bet that they will have the most points in the month of March, so they better get on it. And they're playing the Sharks tonight, guys. So, like, Sharks, come on. Dallas Stars tonight on the puck line with a Jason Robertson goal.
Yeah, if that doesn't win, we're going to be pretty upset on this show. Raptors and Pelicans tonight. We torched the Pelicans, like, 2 weeks ago. Worst look in sports, right? Like,
that was you.
I think it was both of us. Anyway, they're in town tonight, so we get to see those beautiful jerseys on display, and Brandon Ingram will be one of those players wearing those beautiful jerseys. Brandon Ingram, I don't know, does he have this lengthy history against the Raptors that's profitable? I'm not really sure, but 41 points and 36 points in his last two meetings versus the Raptors. Raptors without Scottie Barnes. I am laddering this baby up. 25-plus points, +165, 30-plus points, +450, might go to 35 as well. Brandon Ingram might not have much resistance tonight. I expect him to score a lot, and I expect the Raptors to probably be in a little bit tough tonight.
Okay, I got two other quick ones for you. PWHL Minnesota to win in regulation tonight. They are, well, yeah, that's a good one. They're playing Ottawa. They're back at home. Taylor Heisey back in the lineup after being sidelined with an injury. That's my plus money pick for PWHL Minnesota. Sorry, and it's James Van Riemsdyk's 1,000th game. So sprinkle a little JVR magic tonight. They're playing the Oilers, but I just, you know, storylines.
And I said yesterday, I'm betting the Florida Panthers every time it's near a -110.
It's plus money.
The Panthers are -130 tonight. -130 on the road. And I also like the Kings tonight, -105 against the Canucks. I still think there's a chance that the Kings storm all the way back in the Pacific Division. Easy schedule, but you got to beat the team that's in front of you. One of them is the Canucks, like the Kings, -105 tonight.
We got a big game on the network after us here when we take a break. Edmonton and Boston. So, you know, Boston had a good one against the Maple Leafs last night. They're on a back-to-back. Edmonton needs some wins. I feel like that's going to be a really good one. And I'm not going to say Stanley Cup final you know,
why not? Preview. Don't shy away.
Somebody
from
got mad at me once.
That'd be a good teams. Stanley Cup final. I would Two be all teams. For Oilers.
I would be so into that. That was half of what Sportsnet picked as a Stanley Cup champ. So.
That's true. A lot of people in this building would be right.
All right, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, we'll be up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Smith and Jones, ahead of New Orleans and Toronto.